It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. A special thanks to Mike, Ben, Gary, and other listeners for reaching out to us, asking for more programs about population growth. And a shout out to John for suggesting we invite an advocate from the Minnesota-based nonprofit Population Balance. As we dig more deeply into the topic of human population and consumption, call in with a question or comment throughout the discussion. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Nandita Bajaj is Executive Director of Population Balance and hosts the Overpopulation Podcast. Nandita, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hey, thank you so much for having me. It's a joy to be here.
Well, let's look at these numbers. The United Nations estimating the global population now at 8 billion, and that's up from an estimated 2.5 billion in 1950. What problems is population growth causing in the world?
Well, there are several. So first, you know, we are very aware of the climate crisis that we're in the midst of. I know you had a guest speak about that yesterday. We've got the biodiversity crisis, species extinction, and a lot of the climate-related issues are going to be driving further issues, both with social and ecological problems. So, you know, for example, nearly half of the world's 2.2 billion children are at extremely high risk from the impacts of climate crisis. We're going to be seeing a lot of, you know, billions of climate-driven refugees being displaced. But then, you know, in terms of just material resources, we are seeing a depletion of soils, materials, desertification, and growing scarcities of fresh water. And these are mainly environmental, but, you know, I'm sure people are quite familiar with the issues of population growth and densification in their own neighborhoods and what that looks like.
As you talk about our own neighborhoods, the United Nations expecting India to overtake China as the world's most populous country around 2027. Population of sub-Saharan Africa likely to double by 2050. Why should people in Wisconsin or Minnesota care about population growth in these places that are thousands of miles away?
Right. And, you know, India actually surpassed China as the most populous country this year, which was earlier than the UN is expected, as you said, in 2027. But, you know, global population, people often think about this as a, you know, high fertility country issue, that it's something that's happening somewhere else. Meanwhile, population growth combined with our massive hyper-consumerism impacts everyone. We're all living on one planet, and we are seeing, for example, the impacts of climate change. Nobody is exempt from those experiences. But people living in hotter, more dense countries are going to be experiencing the worst impacts of that. Why should we care? You know, number one, actually, today's a great day to be having this interview, because just today, according to Global Footprint Network, it's Earth Overshoot Day, which means that as of today, we've used up the entire year's worth of Earth's biocapacity, meaning the capacity of ecosystems to regenerate what we're demanding from them. And so basically, starting tomorrow, we are living in a state of overshoot, borrowing from the future, like living off of nature's credit card. So, you know, at this rate, we would need 1.7 Earths for our current human consumption at the current levels of population to be sustainable. And why should we in the US care? Is because, you know, overshoot, what we're experiencing today, is a combination of both our population and our consumption. And the world's richest countries, of which US is on the top, you know, we consume far more compared to a lot of the lower and middle income countries. So, you know, it's the issues that we're experiencing are a combination of population and consumption. And, you know, U.S. is increasing in population. It's the third most populous country in the world. It also happens to be the most, you know, high consumption country in the world, which makes it, to be honest, you know, if you look at in absolute numbers, it makes, you could say the U.S. is one of the most populated countries based on the levels of consumption that we are using up.
Nandita Bajaj with us leads the Minnesota-based nonprofit Population Balance as we talk about population control. And you can join in the conversation with your questions and comments, 800-642-1234. Nandita, closer to home, Minnesota and Wisconsin are very similar population sizes. And the U.S. Census Bureau says nearly 6 million people live in each state. Do our states have too many people?
Well, you know, that's a great question because according to, again, the Global Footprint Network, each country and each region has a biocapacity, which means, you know, what the land can offer to sustain a given population. And at our current rates, almost all the countries are living beyond the biocapacity that can sustain the current population at current levels of consumption. I don't know state by state, but I know nation by nation, there are calculations that show how far above your own sustainable biocapacity you are. And, you know, if everyone lived like an American, we would need five planets. So we are living way beyond our means in the U.S. And that's why I think the role that richer countries play in our consumptive habits really do make a difference. Climate change, for example, is primarily, not exclusively, but primarily driven by the high consumptive patterns of rich countries. But then, you know, all the rich countries are growing in population too. So we cannot separate population from consumption. Even the IPCC, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, has noted that both population and consumption are drivers of climate change.
With rich countries growing at a faster rate, how much of this issue is about health and longevity, people living longer due to advancements in medicine or, you know, nutrition?
Exactly, Kate. So, you know, a lot of the population growth that has happened in the last even century has been a result of, you know, people living longer. So because we have been seeing a decline in fertility since the last 70 years from we had about five, fertility of five, which is five children on average per woman, to now it's 2.3. But the reason population is still continuing to grow is, you know, we're still adding 80 million people each year, partly because we still have a net gain in births. We're still above the replacement fertility, but as you say, people are living longer, healthier lives. And as a result, we're seeing, you know, both young and old people coexisting in a way that has never happened in history before, because people just wouldn't live that long. So the population kind of stayed fairly stable.
Nandita Bajaj leads the nonprofit organization Population Balance, raising awareness about issues like population growth and consumption, reproductive rights. Call in with a question, share a comment, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks to listener suggestions, we examine the complexities of population growth across the world and connections to tactics forcing women to have more children. It's the latest research from the Minnesota-based nonprofit called Population Balance. You can call in at any point. Drop us a line, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Nandita Bajaj is Executive Director of Population Balance. Nandita, let's turn to government policies. How could state or federal government leaders change policy to limit population growth?
So, Kate, one of the reasons population is growing, one of our pillars that we look at is pronatalism, which is the social, cultural, political pressures that people face, especially women, to have children. And currently, most governments around the world are set up to increase population growth to promote reproduction, even when that may not be something that individuals or couples may want. In fact, a lot of countries actually have coercive pronatalist policies, meaning some of them are conditional. You know, if you have four or more children, then you are eligible for publicly funded education, or you get tax credits, you know, or cash bonuses, et cetera. So when something as personal and consequential as reproduction is tied to conditions that's attached to incentives, that's a huge form of manipulation. And so one of the first things we would demand our governments to do is to stop coercing or compelling people, especially women, to have a certain number of children to meet external demographic goals, whether it is for economic purposes or for militaristic purposes, or for nationalistic reasons to have more people of our own kind. You know, that's something that's really prevalent right now in a lot of industrialized, richer countries where fertility rates have been declining. We are seeing an increase in more heavily pronatalist policies that are trying to compel women to have more children to stave off whatever perceived fears governments have about a declining fertility rate. We have to note that fertility decline is a triumphant thing. It's a very positive thing that's been happening over the last 60, 70 years, after 10,000 years of kind of patriarchal pressures that women have experienced, we only in the last 50, 60 years have we started to see women gaining more reproductive autonomy. There being relatively more gender equality. And that's something we should be celebrating. Our governments really should be helping to move that transition along for other countries where gender equality has not yet been realized, where women don't have autonomy over their own bodies to decide if, when and how many children to have. So at this point, I would say that our policies really need to shift away from just encouraging reproduction to really helping families, to helping the children who are already here, people who do want children, to help making them more family-friendly policies rather than just pro-reproduction policies. Mm-hmm. And given that, we are seeing an aging population, instead of forcing population growth for economic growth, we should be directing some of that funding from incentivizing birth to actually supporting the elderly population with better preventative health care, better pension funds, just you know, better integration into the workforce. But that's something, you know, we can talk about a bit more.
Yes. Well, let's pause here and take a call. Nick joining us from Madison. Nick, hi. What would you like to add?
I guess I'm a little confused paying attention to the news the last few years. I thought there was a general decrease in younger people having children, or at least for sure putting off having children for financial reasons or other reasons here. I don't know if that's just America. I've heard, I know in China, I think I heard the same thing. I have three kids, age 28 to 31. They all have partners, serious partners. They all three seem very nowhere near having children. And then with the recent, law change of allowing birth control without a doctor's prescription at the pharmacy, it seems, I thought we were moving in the right direction. So it kind of isn't what I'm hearing from your speaker this morning.
Nick, thank you for bringing those thoughts to the conversation. Nandita, go ahead.
Yeah, those are really important things that you brought up, Nick. Firstly, I think the reason we are hearing a lot of this narrative that, we are in a state of population decline or we are moving in the right direction, maybe I think overshadows the reality that we're actually still growing as a global population by about 80 million people a year. And we are expected to grow well into the century, you know, towards the end of the century is when the UN says we might hit the peak and then start to gradually decline. So while, you know, in a lot of countries where there is greater degree of gender equality and greater reproductive autonomy, people are choosing, like you are noticing, to put off parenting altogether or just to delay it. And those are good things. But, you know, part of the media narrative around people delaying parenthood has been that of alarmism. And we should be careful about how we interpret that, because a lot of media narrative is influenced by much more the neoliberal kind of rhetoric that we need constant population growth in order to grow the economy. But we have to remember that the economy is here to serve the population and the planet, not the other way around. So when we do see, you know, people actively deciding to put off parenting altogether or to delay it, we should celebrate the privilege that people have of that choice. Remembering that most people around the world still, over 200 million women, still cannot choose what to do with their bodies. They wish to avoid a pregnancy, but cannot because their husbands may not allow it. Their religious leaders may not allow it. They don't have access to contraceptives, family planning counseling, or even the most basic human right, education. You know, or we're seeing young girls continuing still to be married off as children. So, I think just to take the global issue in perspective and remembering that we really are at a global level increasing in population. And with the climate crisis and the, you know, huge refugee crisis that we're going to be experiencing, we have to remain sensitive to the fact that we will be required on an ethical basis to support in the form of reparations a lot of the refugees that will be displaced. So our population will likely increase even more within the United States.
Nandita, in the just a few moments we have left, how is your organization trying to reduce the stigma of being single, child-free, and childless?
Well, thank you for asking that, Kate. That's something we really take a stand on is, choosing not to have children or not being able to have children or choosing not to be partnered. are valid choices that are a response to greater gender equality and greater access to to just women and men being able to say, this is what brings me joy, this is what brings me happiness and meaning, and that I, instead of having a child, I'm going to give my time and resources to, you know, other life endeavors.
Nandita, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Nandita Bajaj, Executive Director of Population Balance. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.